Trevor Zamparelli on 2FM
with Virgin Mobile. Go from scrolling through stories to creating your own. Freedom is calling. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
This is your warning. If you have children around, you might want to switch off or catch this on our podcast later because it's a weird one today.
Warning. The following item is not recommended for little ears.
Because it's time for a dose of sex therapy with Rachel Cook.
Absolutely. It is sex and relationship therapy time. And this is not for little ears or anybody who's sensitive. You have been warned. I do not want an email into jen@rte.ie. And if you are going to write a complaint into jen@rte.ie, put it for the attention of Anita Ward. Remember, you can catch this later on the podcast. This week, it's a really interesting one. We're going to talk about autosexuals. Who are they? What do they want? Why do they keep staring in the mirror? Rachel Cook, good morning.
How's it going, Jen? How are you?
I'm good. So autosexuality, Rachel, I saw it and I thought I have to talk to you about this. I've never heard it before, but what does it mean?
So an autosexual person is someone who's sexually attracted to themselves, either much more than they're attracted to other people or to the exclusion of other people altogether. That's all it means. Attracted to yourself.
Okay, surely that just is being a narcissist.
So this is the kind of main misconception about this, what is realistically a more recently introduced sexuality. So narcissism, narcissistic personality disorder, that's a diagnosable disorder with symptoms including an inflated sense of self, a constant need for admiration, a lack of empathy. Autosexuality is something different. You know, it's not likely to be associated with craving attention from other people or with a lack of empathy or desire to give others pleasure. It's basically a preference towards a private and personal sexual experience. Also with narcissism, beneath the facade of what often people present as extreme confidence is this very fragile sense of worth that's punctured by the slightest criticism. And autosexuality is a sexual orientation or an umbrella term that describes sexual behaviours and beliefs that are directed towards yourself. So that's nothing to do with someone's self-esteem, their empathy for others or their need for others' validation. So they're very different things.
Yeah, okay. So when and where did the term come from?
Yeah, so it came from, there's no one really knows for sure, but it's a term that sex scientists have struggled to define. There's not a huge amount of data or research yet, but it's thought to have been coined by the sex therapist Bernard Applebaum in a paper published in 1989 in the US, and he used it specifically to refer to people who have trouble getting turned on by someone else sexually. However, Kourtney Kardashian launched the term into the wider cultural language when her lifestyle website Poosh published something on it at the end of 2020. So basically that's when it came into the kind of modern lexicon.
Okay, gotcha. So for anyone this is resonating with, what are some signs that you might be autosexual?
Yeah, so one would be that you prefer masturbation to partnered sex. So while you might not say no to sex with other people, you know that your strongest orgasms and deepest sexual satisfaction come from solo sessions. It might be that you use fantasies about yourself when you're having sex in order to orgasm. It might be that you fantasize about yourself when you're masturbating instead of watching porn or listening to porn. It might be that you prioritize masturbation and quality time with yourself over the pursuit of dates with other people. So even when you're presented with the opportunity to go out with other people, you find yourself more enticed by the idea of a night in with yourself in the bath or wrapped up in your own sheets. It might also be that you have sexy dreams about yourself. You know, most of us will show up in our own sex dreams, but usually there's at least one other person present. So if you have persistent sex dreams that feature only yourself, this could be an indicator that you're autosexual. And another one is that you love having sex in front of a mirror because you find yourself a massive turn on. You're aroused by your own naked body. So if that's the case, then that you could also consider autosexuality as an orientation is possible for you.
Sounds very handy. No pun intended, but you know, to the point where you just cut out all the mess and you're just focusing on yourself. I mean, it sounds like a lot of positives to this. Is there any negatives?
Well, you know, look, there is loads of positives. When we turn ourselves on, we depend less on environmental cues
and other people
to get into that kind of sensual or sexual headspace. We're in touch with our own bodies and senses. It, you know, it doesn't inherently mean that you think you're better than other people, that you're selfish, or that you're not attracted to your partners, although it may be that you're not attracted to other people. Really, it's an additional tool in your box for sparking desire and passion. It also takes the pressure off of partnered sex and brings so much pleasure to time alone. So, you know, in itself, it's not wrong, but it can be that partners, potentially, if you are engaging in partnered sex, if you talk to them about it or they notice and ask you about it, it's very possible that their self-esteem might be, you know, their ego might be bruised by it. They might feel insecure that you don't fancy them. So certainly there can be some downsides to it, but it's not inherently wrong, I would say.
I was wondering why Lau was putting that mirror on the ceiling. I was like, this explains so much. But joking aside, are there causes for this type of sexuality, or is it something that you're born with?
Yeah, so basically your orientation is what it is. It's not a medical condition or a problem that needs to be solved, as long as this is something that's happening between consenting adults in a safe enough way, then, you know, there doesn't need to be any problem with it. There's a lot of chat, you know, in the sort of sex therapy world about whether orientation is something that can develop from, you know, childhood experiences, and that it can be fluid over time, which more and more we're seeing that sexuality can be fluid, which kind of goes against the old concept that you are born with a sexuality and that that is completely fixed and never changes. So I think basically we're just coming to a greater acceptance that this is something that is very individual to different people. And again, as long as it's between consenting adults, then it is, you know, absolutely fine.
What are some of the ways, though, to approach your relationship if your partner, or if you think they might be autosexual?
Well, don't take it personally. If your partner's autosexual, it's important to realise it's not about you. Your partner will look at themselves as opposed to you to find stimulation a lot of the time, or all of the time possibly. So that will probably feel unusual, as it's more normative during partnered sex to focus on the others as opposed to the self. And so, yeah, I think being supportive, you know, support and encourage your partner to explore their autosexuality, respect their identity. You know, autosexuality is thought of as a sexual orientation, much like being gay, bisexual, pansexual, or any other identity. And, you know, there might not be the same sort of structural oppression of autosexual people in the same way that there are for other LGBTQ plus people. But there's still a stigma around it that it's often seen as not like a viable way to sexually identify. So make sure to respect that and go in with an open, non-judgmental mind. You know, simply because your partner identifies as autosexual doesn't mean that they're going to be a bad lover or not interested in learning about what pleases you. Basically, just not seeing it as an obstacle, but a vital part of a person you care about. And then, as always, communicate, communicate, communicate. Talk to your partner, listen without judgment, get a better understanding of what their sexuality is for them. The only way that you can create a mutually satisfying relationship is to be very clear with one another about what you like and how you like it. So use it as an opportunity to learn more about each other and communicate about your sexual needs, and then it can be a very fulfilling part of your life together.
Okay, so hit us with some other newer types of sexuality that we may have not heard of, but we need to be aware of.
Ooh. Yeah, I've got some. Okay, scoliosexual is one of the newest terms, and that refers to a person who is attracted to anyone who isn't cisgender. So that means a scoliosexual finds themselves attracted to people who are trans or non-binary, or basically genderqueer, mm-hmm. anything other than cisgendered. Then we've got demisexual, which we've talked about before, and that describes people who experience sexual attraction only when they have already built an emotional connection with a person. So they only begin to be sexually attracted to them once they have an emotional connection with the person. And then you have, what else have we got? We've got sapiosexual. You'll know this one well, but that's kind of going out of fashion now because it's seen as being quite ableist as well, and kind of classist, elitist. It's a word to describe people who experience attraction based on intelligence rather than sex or gender or, you know, how they look physically. Then we've got polysexual, which is a term that describes people with a sexual orientation that involves romantic or sexual attraction to people with varying genders. So it's actually an umbrella term that includes bisexuality, pansexuality, omnisexuality, and queer. And then another one we've got is called lithosexuality, which is refers to people who may who experience sexual attraction but do not want the feelings reciprocated, which is an interesting one. And then a related one is reciprosexuality, which describes someone who does not experience romantic or sexual attraction to someone until they know that the other person is attracted to them. So they're kind of opposites there. Another couple of ones in there, which can be confusing, you know, because there's so many terms out there. But I think it's great that we have all this language to describe. It can be a bit difficult to update our language and our understanding of these things because it's changing all the time. But I think it's fantastic that we have so much more understanding and acceptance of ways to experience your sexuality.
What about those people you see on YouTube who like getting off with cranes?
Oh, you know, I mean, yeah, there's so much out there. It is unbelievable. And I think, again, as long as people are reasonably, safe, happy, doing their thing, then let people get on with it. Marry yourself.
I would love though, Rachel, because everything has a title and a name and kind of is put into a box. Do you think that, in your opinion, do you think that's a healthy thing, or can we all just be... just go under the whole, you know, fluid umbrella? You know what I mean? Because everything, I am this, I am that. Like, do we have to put a name on things?
Yeah, I think, I think we will reach a stage, hopefully fairly soon, where some people will still absolutely want to kind of clearly identify in certain ways because it's an important part of their identity. And especially for people who are more marginalized, it can feel very, very important to them to feel as though they can have some clarity and a way of being clear to others about their identity so that they feel safer and more understood in certain spaces. But that, you know, I think also some people are not fluid. So the idea that we would all identify as fluid probably wouldn't be that helpful because some people just aren't. They're very, very fixed in their gender identity and their sexuality. So I think that we're getting to a stage where eventually people will hopefully just care less about needing to be so specific. But that for now, it is very important for many people to feel safer and to feel accepted and understood by having these labels.
And would you say the sooner as a consenting adult you identify what you like, the better sex life you will have?
For sure. And this is where, you know, usually around like masturbation and being able to work out what kinds of interests you have sexually, which can be done through porn, which can be visual. But again, as we've talked about many times, if you're only looking at mainstream porn, you're going to be getting a very narrow, rigid view of bodies and races and like sexual activities to do with each other. So adding in things like like audio erotica, podcasts, erotic literature, just being able to read sexy stories and things like that, you're going to get a much better idea and sort of probably develop tastes along the way so that you can have a much better time with other people because you're able to be clearer upfront about the range of things that you're into and that you enjoy, so that there'll hopefully be enough crossover between you and another person that you can have a bloody great time together.
Amazing stuff. Rachel Cook, thank you so much. That is Rachel Cook, our psychotherapist and mental health consultant. You can follow Rachel on Instagram at Rachel Jane Cook with an E on the end, and she'll be back next week. So if you have a question that you would like us to put to her in our sex and relationship therapy slot, it's every Wednesday around this time, you can email the show 24/7, whatever you want, jen@rte.ie.
Jennifer Zaffarelli.
Weekday morning from 9
on 2FM.